Jayananda, the king of Rathiatra. Jayananda was the backbone of the Bay Area Rathiatra for years, and his experiences at each one are summarized in last year's Rathiatra edition of Back to Godhead. Behind the scenes, Jayananda was doing everything in preparation for each festival. He would beg food, flowers, and funds, buy materials and build the carts, advertise, arrange for permits, and organize the cooking and serving of prasad. Although things always went right down to the wire, he would consistently succeed in fulfilling all his plans every year. After the festival, Jayananda personally brought a prasadam cake or pie to each and every person who had helped in some way or other. Because of his efforts, the devotees in the Bay Area enjoy to this day an amazingly harmonious relationship with city officials. During the weeks before the festival, Jayananda would sleep at the site where the route carts were under construction. He drives every day at 4, without fail, even if it meant he was getting only 3 or 4 hours sleep, or less. To keep his crew enlivened, he would cook fantastic prasadam on a tiny gas stove on the site. The preparations were always carefully offered, and each was filled with so much bhakti that the temple devotees would sometimes sneak down to the cart site just to get some. He would make huge quantities of walnut and strawberry halava, sometimes with huge quantities of whipping cream poured on top. And kept everybody going, at least in shifts. Jayananda regarded his final Rathiatra, the 1976 festival in New York, to be his most successful. Here's how he described the event in a letter to Keshava Das. Somehow I got the good fortune to work on the New York Rathiatra. It was such an auspicious opportunity. Prabhupada was coming. There was finally a first-class center in Manhattan, and somehow Toshan got an okay to use Fifth Avenue for the parade route. Jambavan was here, and we had a couple of other boys who worked very hard. I was praying that somehow we could just get the carts finished. Somehow, by Krishna's grace, it worked out.
He would conscript people, sometimes off the streets. He would recruit them to join him because there weren't enough people to build. And when the Rathiatra cart was being built in San Francisco, one year it was being built in a Safeway parking lot, a Safeway just a few blocks away from the temple. The devotees got permission to build it there. So Jayananda had his sleeping bag and a little plate, the one plate burner, a Coleman stove, and he would sleep on the platform of the Rathiatra car because he was very committed to just be there all the time and make sure that it got done on schedule. And he was also kind of older than most devotees. He was about 30 years old when he joined, and I was about 23 or 24, and most everyone else was younger. And we thought, wow, this is really significant. Here's a very... this was in the Haight-Ashbury, where most of the devotees joined were kind of into the hippie culture. So he was kind of had a crew cut and was very straight and a cab driver. And everyone thought that was a very significant thing, that this we have a straight person, an older person joining the movement. It was a kind of a credit. And he very shortly after that became the temple president because he was kind of a father figure to most of the devotees. And not only a figure, but he was very caring and gave almost all his salary to the temple. He lived there while he drove his taxi cab and took care of all the devotees' problems and cooked and took out the garbage and was just sort of an all-around servant to the devotees. It was very nice because to have someone like that was very unusual. At that age and that of those qualities. And his work supplied most of the income that the temple had earned at that time. So that one year when he was sleeping out in the Rath car, he would feed the devotees very sumptuously. And, for example, halava was a very favorite and famous thing, but it wasn't ordinary halava that he would make. In fact, sometimes the devotees would bring their sleeping bags out to the Rath car to sleep out there just because they knew they would eat so much better. So one of the things he made was strawberry halava with cream poured over it, real thick cream. And that was kind of a regular feature. The devotees loved to come out there and eat so opulently because they couldn't eat that way in the temple. Sometimes he would see drunken people walking by, kind of homeless, street-type people, and he would walk up to them and ask them if they knew anything about carpentry. And if they were at all affirmative, he'd put a hammer in their hands and put his arm around them and escort them over to the rocket car and put them to work. So that happened on at least one occasion. Yeah. He was also a good mechanic, and there's a story that some devotees came up and saw him working on a car. All they could see were his feet sticking out, and a couple of young people hearing him talk. And apparently he was preaching to them for a long, long time. They couldn't see him. They just saw his feet sticking out from under the car. But he was so enthusiastic to speak about Krishna consciousness that even while he was fixing the car, the motor, all and full of grease, and laying on his back and unable to see the people he was talking to, he just kept talking and talking. And I guess they were saying, yes, uh-huh, you're right. Asking questions too, probably. So he would work on very long hours, and one devotee named Chananacharya thought that the reason he contracted his disease and it overtook his body was that he didn't care for his body, that he worked so hard and such long hours and didn't care about eating or anything else related to the body very much, that he just became very weak in his resistance system, or immune system became very weak. One time, after he had been working for, and he would stay up sometimes 2 days without sleep just to get to make the deadline. He used to go to Fisherman's Wharf with the devotees, and at Fisherman's Wharf they handed out literature, mostly little tracts, and he got donations. Madhurvisa used to go, and there was one devotee. There were two devotees who actually met Jayananda there, and they came back with him to build Rath Yatra cars. So when Jayananda I'll just back up a little bit. I was in England, and I was waiting for a train to go out to the airport, and there was this person standing next to me. He had a great big beard. He was very tall, and he just kept kind of staring at me, and I didn't really know why he was staring. I walked around a little bit, and he just kind of stood there and stared at me. And then I got inside the train, and he sat down next to me. And I thought, this guy's a little strange. You know, why is he kind of following me around? And then he started saying that he was a devotee, and I was wearing my devotee clothes as usual. And I said, "Oh, well, you're a devotee. That's nice." And I asked him where he lived, and he said he'd been living in Denmark. And I said, "Oh, that's good. And what do you do there?" He said, "Well, I live on a ship, and I build ships. I live on a, he lived in a little houseboat, and he built ships for a living." So then we started talking, and it loosened up a little bit, and we got friendly. And then he said he was going to the United States. He was going to the airport. And he was going to fly to America too, and he was just going to. He said, "Just try living in America," and he was going to go to work in a gas station. So this is all very strange. But I just kept taking it in, and then what he really wanted to tell me was that he knew Jayananda, and he wanted to know where he was and what happened. And I said, "Well, he's around. Jayananda was still living there." And I said, "When I get back to California, I'll contact him, and we'll look you up." This fellow's name was Vajrasena. I don't know what became of him. So when I got back to Los Angeles, I had Vajrasena's address in Newport Beach. I told Jayananda, I said, "Oh yeah, Jayananda, Vajrasena, yeah, no, we got to go see him." Jayananda was very sick at this time, and we had a hospital bed in his room in the New Dwarka temple community. And he was very sick. I mean, he was sick to the point that the doctors were saying he should have died like 6 months ago. But he just kept living. And the devotees were taking care of him. So he insisted that he go and see Vajrasena, which meant an automobile ride down to Newport Beach, about an hour away. So we got in the car and went to see Vajrasena. But I couldn't stay awake when I was driving. I had this bad habit of falling asleep at the wheel. I didn't actually ever fall asleep, but I couldn't stay awake. I used to pull over to the side, because that drive between Los Angeles and Laguna Beach is very full of carbon monoxide. I don't know what it is, but I couldn't do it. So I said, "I'm going to have to pull over, John, and I can't stay awake. We'll just have to spend another hour." And he insisted that he drive the car. And I said, "Well, I don't think you're in any condition to drive." He said, no, it's no problem, really. Just trust me, I can drive. You watch, and I'll drive." So he drove, and we went to Newport Beach to see Vajrasena, and there he was, pumping gas in a gas station. So he seemed kind of like not the same when I saw him. He was like kind of into whatever people get into when they're pumping gas in America. not very excited about seeing Jayananda, but Jayananda got out and went and talked to him for a long time between customers, between pumping gas. And I don't know what they said, because I thought best to kind of leave them to it. And then about an hour later, Jayananda got back in the car, and I said hello to Bhadrasena. And then we drove back, and I asked him, I interrogated him, what they said. And he was just very somber that he couldn't bring this person back to Krishna consciousness, that he was trying to speak to him, trying to get him to revive his feelings about Prabhupada and Krishna and Krishna consciousness. And he just was kind of felt kind of remorseful. But he said it wasn't a wasted trip, that he was glad that he went down and got a chance to talk to him. So that was kind of instructive to me, that he went to so much difficulty, and even though didn't get the result he wanted, he was still, although a little morose, still felt it was worth the trip. when he was in New York, he was in the hospital, and this was before he came out to LA and had the hospital bed in the community. He had been diagnosed as having lymph node cancer, and at one point the devotees in New York decided he should be hospitalized. So he was in the hospital, and I think being given some intravenous and a lot of antibiotics. So he told Chitsukananda, a devotee who knew him very well, that these drugs were not very good, that they were making him have bad dreams, very bad dreams, and wanted to stop them. And he asked him that the food was terrible, that they just didn't know how to deal with a vegetarian, and they were just giving him little bits and scraps of raw food mostly. So he asked him if he could just bring some samosas. And it was against the doctor's order that he have anything like that, because it was cooked and, of course, soaked in ghee and all that. But nonetheless, Chitsukananda brought him about 30 samosas in one of these big gray tubs that devotees used to have, plastic tubs. And over the course of the day, he ate every one of them. And he was just amazed at his condition. He had such an incredible appetite that he could eat all the samosas. So he told Chitsukananda on another day that he was going to discharge, he was going to leave the hospital. And he pulled all the intravenous lines out of his arms, and he said, I'm just going to get into my street clothes, get out of these hospital clothes, and I'm just going to walk out of here. I can't take these drugs, I can't handle these bad dreams, so just go and wait for me in the lobby, and I'll be there. And he said, just wait? Well, what'll I do? I just sit there. He said, no, just preach. Whoever there, just preach to them. So he went out to the lobby, and there were a group of people sitting there. He said they were mostly middle-aged, and he never kind of spontaneously started preaching to anybody before. But he took Jayananda's words to heart, and he just started speaking to the group like it was a little class about Krishna consciousness. He was dressed as a monk, and he said they were all listening. And he said he'd never had an experience like that before. He just kind of went on Jayananda's energy that he should preach, and he was preaching. I think he told me he had a little kirtan before. He sat down on the floor. He had some kartals and had a little kirtan. And they were all kind of mildly interested. Anyway, Jayananda appeared in street clothes, and they just walked out of the hospital, never to return. Actually, when the Ratha Yatra took place the first time in New York, Prabhupada saw it, and he was very amazed at how hard Jayananda worked. The whole infrastructure got blown down by a gust of wind of the infrastructure of the canopy, and they built it all up the same night. It got the night before the festival, it got blown down, and they built it all back up. And it was one of those day and night things. You know, we worked day and night. Anyway, when Prabhupada saw it, he said that he thought that Jayananda and Toshan should get a certificate of merit of some sort for their hard work. And in a letter to Jayananda, he wrote, after seeing the chariots go down Fifth Avenue in New York. Fifth Avenue is the place where all the biggest parades in America take place. After World War II and World War I, the generals, they went in motorcades down this street, and people were throwing unlimited amounts of confetti and streamers down on them. And it's where the Macy's Day Parade, the St. Patrick's Day Parade, and all the big parades take place. So somehow this first Ratha Yatra in New York went right down this route on Fifth Avenue. You've probably seen videos of it, big buildings on both sides. It's like a big cavern going down the street. So when Prabhupada saw it, he wrote a letter to Jayananda saying, you have fulfilled my most cherished dream.
So we can see how much Prabhupada wanted these Ratha-yatra festivals in prominent places, and how he was glorifying his devotees for carrying out the dream.
And one of the really amazing things he did was that he started the Eli Ratha-yatra. He kind of conceived of it and organized it. he was in his bed, and he said, "You know, you should have Ratha-yatra in Los Angeles. It's such a big city." So Rameshwar was the GBC then. Rameshwar Prabhu and Karandar was sort of one of the leaders. So we decided, Jayanath said, "Let's just go. We'll find a route." And this had never been done. San Francisco was always the leading place of Ratha-yatra. So this was 1977. And Ratha-yatra had been going on in San Francisco for 10 years. And LA is just like such a kind of a spaced out in the sense that there's no place where a lot of people congregate in one place. It's just a lot of little neighborhoods. It's kind of the way it grew up. So we went out in the car. We just thought, well, we'll humor Jayananda. He wants to find a route. So we went all over the city. Downtown had a lot of people, but it was kind of a bit of a slum, and that didn't seem right. And then we went out to look on Venice Boulevard, which runs by the temple, and there were hardly any people there. That we can't have a place, can't have a Ratha-yatra where there's no people. Then we went to Beverly Hills, we went to the valley, and everywhere we went, there was no people. There were just no people. And they were either in their office or in their cars or in their homes or someplace. So then we thought, we'll just go to the beach. You know, maybe there'll be some people down there. So we went to the beach. And there's a boardwalk that goes along the beach that people walk on. It's next to the sand. It's not for cars. And all of a sudden, there were heaps of people, just tons of people walking up and down. And it wasn't the summertime, it was the wintertime, but they come from all over the world to see the beach, and especially they want to see Venice Beach, because Venice is a very famous beach somehow or other. So there were hordes of people. And as soon as he saw the people, he thought, wow, this is the place. This is the route. We have to have it here. And there was about a mile and a half to 2 miles of this oceanfront walk where there's no cars and just people can walk along the beach. They were skating. They were being pulled on skateboards by their dogs. They were on wagons. They were on animals. And, you know, just every imaginable kind of thing that moves was down there. Almost like the roads in India. You see the camels and the donkeys and the goats and the bears. So he got it in his mind that was it. And he was in a wheelchair then. He couldn't walk, so we kind of walked the route with him in his wheelchair. And as we approached the end of the boardwalk, there was a uniformed policeman that was standing there like this with his legs spread out. And then he walked right up in front of the wheelchair. And we thought, oh no, what do we do now? What are we doing now? Maybe we're not supposed to have a wheelchair on the boardwalk? Or, you know, what's all this about? So he said, "My name is Sergeant White. I'm with the Los Angeles Police Department, and I want to shake your hand." And he held his hand out to Jayananda, and then he held his hand out to the others of us. He said, "You know, you saved one of my men's life last night." He said, I think you probably know about this." And we didn't know anything. We just kept kind of nodding our heads, and we didn't want to rain in his parade. He said that there was some kind of a gang war, a fight, and several policemen were in downtown L.A., and someone who he thought was a Hare Krishna stopped the man with a gun from being fired at one of his friends. So I don't know why it happened or how it happened or what happened. We never found out, but it was kind of amazing that he shook Jayananda's hand. I think maybe he thought he got injured in a gunfire or something. So we just kind of took it all in and said, "That's good, that's auspicious, so we'll have to have Ratha-yatra here at Oceanfront Walk." So we went back, and Rameshwar was the kind of the GVC and the head of the community, and he was the one we would have to get permission from officially to have Ratha-yatra, because he didn't make it an ironclad community. He said, "Well, that's good. I'll have to, you know, think about this for a little while." But Jayananda grew very impatient, and as he was in his hospital bed, he decided to design the carts. So he called in Lalitnath, who's an expert carpenter and builder, and together, and he's also, and Jayananda was an engineer, a construction engineer. So they figured out how to build the carts, the physics of it, the engineering aspects of it, how the wheels would go, how they would steer, how they would be pulled, and how they would be built, everything. So then he asked Rameshwar asked me to ask him, and he said, "Well, I'm still, you know, I still have to think about this a little more." So in his impatience, he had a phone in his room. He phoned up some lumber companies, and he had figured out the exact amount of lumber, the exact dimensions of all the wood that would be needed to build these cars, and had it unannounced delivered to the parking lot of 3764 Watsiko, which is where the temple is. So one day, this three huge stacks of lumber just appeared in the parking lot, and someone reported this to Rameshwar. "Oh, there's this big lumber. These trucks came, and they left all this lumber." And then he understood, then he heard that Jayananda had done this. And as soon as he heard, his heart kind of melted. He just thought, there's nothing I can do. I can't stop this man. I can't hold him up for giving permission. So that was the kind of official beginning. So then he began to organize. And we didn't have a lot of time because I think we decided that we wanted to have it on the 15th of August, which was Indian Independence Day. I think that's the day of, yeah. So we wanted to, you know, have it kind of coincide and be a big event. It would not only be big because there's innumerable people down on those beaches, but because we wanted our friends in the Indian community to participate in. And we were going to call the first one the Festival of India, as a kind of generic title, Festival of the Chariots, Festival of India. So we made a grid. On one axis was a list of all the devotees, and on the other axis was the days of the week. And I think we even had the hours. So for, that was in May or, yeah, that was in, I'm sorry, it was in April. He passed away in May. So we had April, May, June, July. It seems like it's not a long time, but it was a very long time when you consider what went into it, which I'll explain. So we made this grid, and we had one for each month, and every devotee in the community, there were 300 or 400 at that time, had something to do every day for the Rath Yatra. That's the way he wanted it done. So we made this grid, and we had assignments for every person in the community for months. So the site, the route was to be from Santa Monica down this ocean front walk into Venice. It goes along, parallels the ocean front, and then end in a grassy area. This is a 4-acre site. And upon this area, we decided to have a complete exposition of Krishna consciousness with Jayananda. And that meant having big tents, big pandals, photo exhibition, video exhibition, deity clothes exhibition, shop with all the things that they sell in New Dwarka, changing bodies exhibition, sculptures, drama, three stages for performing arts, and we elephant rides for children. So we had this really ambitious proposal. It was going to cost us over $100,000, which in those days, it's still a lot, but in those days it was even more because of inflation. So we set out, I don't know how we came up with this idea, because there just wasn't money like that. But one of the things that Rameshwar agreed to do is to have a marathon. And I said that I would try to raise about 30,000 to 40,000 along with everyone. So we just started visiting everybody we knew. We went all over the state, all into other states, and somehow we started accumulating all this money. And we raised enough to have these huge tents shipped over from India, and buy portable stages and banners to string up over all the big streets, Festival of the Chariots, Festival of India, and make videos that were shown on public access. And we had about a $3,000 or $4,000 advertising budget. Then there was the elephants. That was another $4,000. We wanted painted elephants to walk in the parade between the rath carts with clowns and people dressed very gaily on their backs playing trumpets. And so we had all these somehow or other there was enough, LA was opulent enough to consider that such money to do such a thing would be possible. Oh, and there was a free feast also, and food booths, two or three paying booths, and then a free feast booth. All this coming from Jayananda. And at the end of every day, we would go into his room and give him a report of what we did, what happened that day. And he would just shake his head and say, "Boy, I don't know how you guys do it. I just don't know how you do it." So we felt very puffed up and very important, because Jayananda was saying such things to us every day. And we got like power to go out the next day and do something. The test came like 3 days before. We had ordered him Chiru, was in India, Chiru Prabhu, and we were calling him on the phone and getting following the movements of the ships all the way across from Singapore. They changed this, they put him on a different ship, and then they came to LA from India, started in Bombay, went all the way around the bottom of India. And I remember sleeping by the telephone, making calls to India. In those days, it was very hard to call India. You had to go through the operator, and it was all, yes, what? You had to shout and scream. So it kind of reached a feverish pitch towards the end. We didn't know whether we were going to get the tents, and then there were big trucks outside keeping the potato salad cold, and then people were cooking, and then they used an industrial sewing machine to make banners, and we strung up about 30 banners from big poles on the streets. It was, we found out later, completely illegal, but the city government didn't look deeply into the regulations, so they didn't stop us. And we got this big crane, and we went ourselves out at night and put up the big banners. And one of them was across this big wide street, Wilshire Avenue, or Westwood Boulevard. It was on the corner. And it was a big, it was like three lanes in each direction. And this banner started to sag. And one day it sagged so low that a truck caught it. And it started to go through the street pulling this banner. And it pulled so hard that the lampposts that the banner was connected to were bending forward. And it according to an eyewitness, it looked like they were actually going to snap. And if they hit anyone, they could have been killed. But the last minute, the ropes broke. And the truck just kind of went on the street, and then the banner fell off. And we heard this from a man who worked in a parking lot booth on that corner. And he saw the whole thing. And he went over and got the banner and rolled it up and brought it into his booth. And he said it was just a miracle. Because we went there and we were looking around, and he came out and saw some devotees, and he told us this whole story. It was just a miracle that the police weren't called, that they didn't make us take down all the rest of the banners. So that was one of the things that happened. Anyway, it in the last 5 days, I don't think anyone in the temple was doing anything else. I have to back up further, a little further. And that was that it was Jayananda's birthday. And this was sometime in April, I think. So we wanted to have a party for him. So we wanted him to come out and see the Rath Yatra carts. And the devotees had made these cakes that looked just like Rath Yatra chariots. They had donuts for wheels, and they decorated in the same colors of green, yellow, red, and blue that the Rath Yatra carts were. And it looked exactly like Rath Yatra carts. They had three of them, three big cakes. So they brought him out to the site where the carts were being built in the parking lot, but we couldn't get Jayananda to come out there. He said he wasn't feeling well, he was too sick. So we decided, we had a little plot that we would get Lalita Nanda, who is the chief builder, to come in and tell me he had an engineering problem, and Jayananda had to personally see it, otherwise he just couldn't solve it. So he came in and told him the story. And somehow Jayananda, it appeared he didn't really believe him, but he was so insistent that he said, okay, I'll go out. So we wheeled him out there in a wheelchair. And just as we got up to the car, Jayananda heard the devotees chanting and heard a few people saying happy birthday, and then he all of a sudden smiled and realized that it was a birthday party. So it wasn't exactly an ordinary birthday party. It was filled with devotees, and Jayananda was sitting in his wheelchair. But he, after this great kirtan and the happy birthday singing had kind of worn down or come to an end, he insisted on speaking. So the devotees wanted him to talk from his wheelchair, but he insisted on standing up. There was a devotee on either side of him to catch him if he would fall down, and he was very weak. To stand up was very hard, and his voice was breaking up. If you could hear his voice, you would see it was almost kind of like you hear a wheeze in between the sentences. But he spoke about the Rath Yatra, how he talked about how important it was that all the devotees should absorb themselves in this festival, and that it was very dear to Prabhupada, and that the more they participated in the Rath Yatra, the more they would become spiritually advanced, and that everyone should participate and just abandon themselves to this festival. He talked like that about how important it was to be dedicated. And then he sat down, and the devotees brought him a big plate with a sample of each cake, Rath Yatra car, on it. And there were a number of children kind of standing around looking at it. They'd never seen such a spectacle. And so instead of eating the cake, he just started breaking off little pieces and giving it to the children, which they were all very happy to take. And So that was his birthday party. Then everyone had some cake, had some of the Rath Yatra cake. And it came to pass that before that Rath Yatra actually took place, Chaitanya passed away. I was in San Diego at the time, so I wasn't there, but unfortunately, but the devotees explained the situation about how the garland fell from Lord Jagannath and they put it on him and how they wrote to Prabhupada and so on. So this was, of course, in May, and we had to have everything by August 15th. It seems like a long time, but considering all the things that were in that 4 acres, it was such an intense, and it's still, except for maybe Calcutta, it's still the most full, comprehensive Rath Yatra festival in the whole world. It's an amazing festival. I think any of you have been there, you know. So we were kind of reinvigorated and rejuvenated to do all this work. Now that Jayananda was gone, he was the person who started everything. So we were kind of going forward in the wake of the great soul, trying to make everything happen. We had to get permission from about 30 different agencies and individuals to put on this festival. We had to have a festival for food, permission. We had to have a permit, a written permit for food. We had to have a permit for banners. We had to have a permit for the parade itself. We had to have a building permit. We had to have health permits. And I'm really not exaggerating, there's about 30 different permits that we had to get. We had to have a permit to just even have the parade from the local park. And there were two different cities involved, Santa Monica and Los Angeles, so it was complicated. We had to get police's permission. We had to get fire department's permission. So we got all that. And all this was going on Jayananda's energy. When the Rath Yatra happened, it was so intense that several of us were up. And I had been up the night before, and we had a radio phone going to the beach about 5 miles away, and we were trying to organize everything at the last minute. And I remember I was shaving in the bathroom because I'd been up all night getting ready to go to the Rath Yatra, and I had I was talking at the same time to the telephone to the beach. At the same time, I had another portable cellular telephone there. It was a really mad occasion. So Jayananda's parents flew out for that Rath Yatra. And one of the very interesting and amazing things that happened at that Rath Yatra is, first of all, it was a very successful one. We got all the elephants. There were elephant rides. It was, all the tents arrived in time, days before. The CBS television network decided to do a national broadcast of this event, which is very unusual because the national television, which went out to about 350 outlets, usually only carried heavy news of scandals and murders and things like that. So somehow this amazing thing happened that they came out to the site and they started interviewing devotees and eating prasadam, and they broadcasted it that night. And it was a very, very good broadcast. So at the end of the evening, we had been up and we were very haggard. And it was about 11 o'clock at night when the CBS news came out and we heard it would be on. So we could barely stay awake. And the interviewer was named Sharon Lovejoy. It's a hard name to forget. She was eating samosas the whole time and interviewing people and said it was one of the happiest days of her life. She was interviewing people in the crowds, and lo and behold, she interviewed some devotees. Out of the thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people who were there, she was suddenly interviewing Jayananda's parents, who had come out from Grand Junction, Colorado, long distance. So she asked her usual questions, what's your name, where are you from? Oh, Grand Junction, Colorado. It's a long ways. What are you here for, just your tourists? He said, no, actually our son built these chariots. I said, really, your son built them? And then they said, yeah, but he died of leukemia a few months ago. And so this was just too good to be missed. So she asked them a few more questions, what their name was, where they worked. But it was just amazing because we saw all this on TV. All of a sudden, there were his parents kind of glorifying him. And it was a perfect way to end the festival, to end the day, because we worked so hard. And here was this television broadcast, which in those days was seen by 20 or 25 million people. And who else but Jayananda's parents were there? So that was a very poignant way to remember Jayananda. He had passed away in 1977, but in
let's see what year this was, 81? There was a festival in Durban, South Africa. I'm sorry, it was 1989. Okay. This is a letter. Maybe I'll just read this letter. It's written by a person who was a classmate of Jayananda in high school. They went to Dayton High School, Oakwood High School. So this man, who was a friend of Jayananda's, also is one of the people who coordinates the class reunions of this high school. So like every year, every 10 years, they have a class reunion. So he, in one of the letters he wrote to all his classmates, he wrote about Jayananda because he saw his picture when he was in Durban, South Africa, on the front of the Yatra car, and he thought he recognized him. So this is his letter. I want to tell you, dear Oakwood High School classmates and friends, this is dated January 27, 1990. I wanted to tell you about my Christmas vacation trip to Durban, South Africa. This letter is about one of our classmates, Jim Kaur. While in Durban on December 29 and 30th, 1989, I attended each day the Hare Krishna Festival of the Chariots being held at the beachfront. To give you an idea of the size of the festival, they fed 52,000 plates of food on the first day. It was vegetarian food and given free to all who wanted it, and it was tasty! Exclamation point. The chariot was 45 feet tall. It carried about a dozen people on it, throwing candies to the crowd. It was being pulled by members of the movement. The first day of the festival opened with a parade along Durban's Golden Mile in front of all luxury hotels. On the chariot are painted figures of Krishna and his consort, a wax museum model of the man who brought Hare Krishna to the West, and a photo of a man in Hare Krishna robes. That's Jayananda. The photo was about 2.5 feet by 3 feet. I asked my South African friend, who knows a lot about Hare Krishna, who the photo was of. He said he didn't know. The second day of the festival, my friend drew me into a conversation with a French woman who had lived in South Africa for 20 years and had been in Hare Krishna for 11 years. I told her about my classmate who died in San Francisco in 1977 while active in Hare Krishna. She asked his name. I told her it was Jim Kaur. She asked me if the previous day I had seen the photo on the front of the chariot. She told me it was Jim Kaur. They call him by his Krishna name, Jayananda, but she knew his name, Jim Kaur name, too, also. And she knew about his college degree. I was flabbergasted, to say the least. That day I spoke to about a dozen Hare Krishna members who all knew the full story of Jim Kaur, or Jayananda, as they always call him. They all know about his death from leukemia, his strength at the end of his life, and his devotion to the Krishna movement. And these people have not been to the USA and probably joined Hare Krishna after Jim died in 1977, but they all knew about him. Now, now I hope I explain the next properly. As I understand the Hare Krishna movement, and I may have it all confused, one is reincarnated again and again until he perfects his life enough to go to be with Krishna, or God. They believe that Jim has gone directly to Krishna's abode and has no further need to be reincarnated. He doesn't need any more perfecting. He has achieved it all. I was repeatedly asked, what was Jim like in school? Well, you know, that was quite a few years ago. I had even forgotten or just not given a thought to the fact that Jim and I lived in the same cabin in summer camp. And I forgot that until I came upon the 1951 camp photo. And the photo of Jim on the front of the chariot is unrecognizable because of the years the Hare Krishna robes Jim is wearing, and because, as they said, the photo is not a good one because it was not taken until Jim was very ill. I told them that Jim was very funny. They said they could believe and understand that from what they had heard about him. I was told that Jim worked very hard. When Jim cleaned the garbage cans, he cleaned them so well, quote, because they were Krishna's, end quote. New devotees would see his work and think, quote, if this is how thoroughly the garbage cans have to be cleaned, how must the more important work be done? ? One time when Jim was a leader, he returned late at night and saw that a chore had not been done properly. Rather than awaken the offender, Jim did the job again himself. Jim could run on very little sleep. A surprise birthday was given for Jim, but he was truly embarrassed by all this attention being directed at him. So now, the next time you see Hare Krishna, a devotee on the streets,
go up and tell him or her that you went to school with Jayananda. You'll get red carpet treatment. The story of Jayananda will be known! Exclamation point. And remember, I was in South Africa, which is 11,000 miles from Los Angeles, and they all knew. When he passed away, his parents came out, and we had a kirtan for him. And what happened was we took the body out to a crematorium, which was in a cemetery. And there was Chitsukananda, Chandanacharya, Rameshwar, and Babubrahan and myself, five of us. So we kind of went out into this cemetery. They were preparing their crematory, and it was right in the middle of the cemetery. So while they were preparing, we had a little kirtan out there with his parents. There was actually with the parents, it makes seven. And they kind of all sat there. They were elderly people, and they kind of sat on the grass. It was a very nice sunny day. And we had a kirtan, a long kirtan. And then it was time for the cremation. So they had placed his body in this this cardboard box. That's the way they did it. And it was all sealed up. The devotees had put a flower in his hand, flower from the deity's garlands in New Dwarka. And it's very strange the way crematoriums work. I don't know if they're all like this, but they put this box with the body in it on a conveyor belt, and it went up into the furnace. And so we saw that this box going into the furnace, and then the door, it's a little opening about this big with this fire, and then but the box goes in and this big kind of thing comes down and closes the door. And then you wait, and then when smoke comes out of the smokestack, you know that the body has been cremated. So that's what happened, and this was very hard on his mother to watch all this. She was very broken up to see the smoke, and even though she'd been chanting with us, she became very kind of distraught. So we thought, well, I'll go back to the temple, and since it was the order of the Acharyas, we'll have a nice feast in Jayananda's honor. So we did that, and we went to Rameshwar's room. We sat around the table, and the devotees had prepared very nice prasadam. It was very fond, actually, of this potato preparation that a devotee named Biharini prepared. In fact, one day when he was very sick, he said, I have one last request, a dying man's request, he said. I want some of Biharini's prasadam, her potato. She made this little pieces of potato with I think, sour cream and some curd. So he brought she made this big bowl for Jayananda. It was about, like, big. And he ate the whole thing. It was amazing because he was just surviving on liquid vegetables at the time, but he had such a zest for prasadam. So at this feast for him, she had cooked and made that prep and several things. And his parents were very changed from the funeral, from the cremation. His mother had completely regained her composure, and instead of being very morose and crying and sad, both the parents started talking about him in a very lively way, about what he used to do and what it was like when he was a teenager, and all the mischievous things. And all of a sudden the mood was very happy and very light. And then we started telling things that we knew about Jayananda. And they were saying, oh, we never knew he did things like that. And we never knew he did things like this. And we were saying to them, well, we didn't know things that you've been saying. And so it all became a very happy occasion. And then everybody ate. They had a very nice appetite, and they ate prasadam, and they were just like, you know, kind of part of the devotee's family. So then I think his ashes were taken to the Ganga later and strewn over there.